There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Live sport, the latest headlines, and top debate. This is The Grill with Tom Urquhart on DubaiEye 103.8.
Interesting. Good afternoon. Welcome to The Grill, broadcasting live from Brest, where the game is always on. What have we got for you over the next 3 hours? Early kickoff in the Premier League. That one gets underway in around about 25 minutes' time. Early off in Scotland already and in Spain. And we've also got an early over in Italy. So plenty to look forward to when it comes to all things football. Talking of football from 6 o'clock this evening right here on Dubai Eye. Commentary of Manchester United's visits down south to Southampton. We've got all that one for you, plus the late kickoff as well. In the world of rugby, we're going to cast our eyes over and look ahead to the big games in the Aviva Prem and Pro 14 getting underway after we go off air. Plus live action from the top 14. There's the prelim finals of the NRL which are going on at the moment. We know who's going to make it through to finals weekend of the AFL. We'll talk to you about that. We've got a preview of tomorrow's ODIs. India against Australia and England against the West Indies. Tour Championship is underway over in the States. We'll have the latest from that and the Portugal Masters, plus week 3 of the NFL. MLB October playoffs are just around the corner. And there's the small matter of the brand new Laver Cup over in Czechoslovakia. So plenty to get through right here on The Grill. If you are in and around Barasti, if you're down near Minasiahi, if you are in and around La Meridian Minasiahi, then do come and say hi. 4001. If you are not, you can send us your thoughts via text messages. Or equally, if you're on Twitter between now and the end of play, do drop us a line at Dubai Eye Sport. This is The Grill. We're live from Barasti.
Grill, get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
G'day, boys. Good to have you with us. Great to have you on board. As always, just quick re-mention of those numbers that you can stay in touch. You can text us now at 4001. You can give us a call on 04-423-1010, or why not get in touch via social media at Dubai Eye. Sport is probably the best way to do it. That's the handle for Twitter. Who have we got with you throughout the afternoon? Our head of sport, Chris McCarty. He's going to have a sore neck by the end of the afternoon, that's for sure. All right?
Yeah, very good afternoon, Tom. A very good afternoon to the listeners. And you're right, because, well, there's so much football to keep an eye on this afternoon. I've got to my right-hand side the first Old Firm of the new Scottish season. That is, it's Rangers against Celtic. And to my left, we're building up to the big game, the early kickoff in the English Premier League. It is West Ham United taking on Tottenham Hotspur. What I can tell you from the early exchanges of the Old Firm clash, 6 minutes on the clock, it's Rangers 0, Celtic 0. No surprises to see Celtic dominating in the early stages. They are the ones that are monopolising, if I can get my words out, possession. But it is Rangers 0, Celtic 0.
Chris McCarty's on that side of the table. Mark Archer is on this side of the table. He's keeping an eye on live action from the NRL. What is going on in the NRL this weekend?
It is preliminary finals time, which is Australian for semi-final. I can tell you that the AFL Grand Final will take place next week at the MCG. And we do know who the two finalists are at that big match at the Melbourne Cricket Ground next weekend, Saturday the 30th of September. It will be the Adelaide Crows taking on the Richmond Tigers. Richmond Tigers have qualified for their first final since 1982. They defeated today Greater Western Suburbs Sydney by 36 points. And it was yesterday where the Adelaide Crows got to their first final of the century, demolishing the Geelong Cats. I can tell you, NRL weekend, also preliminary finals, Melbourne Storm have advanced yesterday with a big win over the Brisbane Broncos, 30-0. And there's 20 minutes remaining in the second preliminary final. It's the North Queensland Cowboys leading the Sydney Roosters by 2 points, 14 points to 12. Just sticking down under, Tom, and segueing slightly, if you're a politician or interested in politics, the New Zealand election has been won. It looks like National are going to regain power, but they're going to have to form it with New Zealand First, so Winston Peters will be the kingmaker down under.
What's going on here? What's happening?
Sports, the grill has been replaced by politics today, I think, with Mark Archer.
The two never go together, do they, surely?
Go together more often than we'd like to think, Tom. But
mind you, talking of that, hasn't Donald Trump been a little bit vocal overnight about the singing of the national anthem?
He has,
yes. Or the non-singing of the national anthem.
Non-singing of the national anthem with Colin Kaepernick. He's had, that's polarising opinion, as Donald so often does on social media and across other media platforms. But yeah, he's had a pop at Colin Kaepernick, and he's essentially calling on owners to keep him out of the game.
Well, it's a pop at a number of players some people think of disrespecting the anthem by taking a knee, particularly the African-American players, by saying we're not getting the social justice we get in America, so they're not respecting the national anthem, not standing. and taking a knee. Colin Kaepernick without a club in the NFL this season, formerly with the San Francisco 49ers, and we'll be covering a bit of NFL later in the season, week three this weekend, and a match in London to talk about tomorrow.
Looking forward to all that. What is pressing at the moment, though, is all things football. As we mentioned, we're underway over in Scotland. Did you say this is the first Old Firm derby?
Yes, first Old Firm of the new season, Tom. Six games in total last season, four in the league, one Scottish semi-final, one League Cup semi-final. Celtic winning five and drawing one of those. They had a 5-1 win and in this fixture the back end of last season. Celtic excellent, and already in these opening exchanges Celtic look a class apart. They really are. This is not so much the contest that it once was. Celtic are streets ahead of Rangers. Rangers very much now the smaller team. There might be a few Rangers fans out there on the road not agreeing with that, but you can't lie with the fact Celtic have won copious amounts of league titles over the past 5-6 years, and you know, Rangers have a real task on their hands, not only to stop Celtic this season, but I think to stop Celtic winning what would be a record 10 in a row. Of course, both Celtic and Rangers, they share that record of 9 league titles in succession. Celtic, what do they need? Another 4, I think it is. They've done 6 in a row, so they need another 4. And looking at the chasm between the two of these clubs, I think Celtic could go on and do that. And if they don't, it would be a huge... Well, it would be a huge blow to Celtic fans.
That's what's happening over in Scotland. There's an early kickoff in Spain at the moment as well. Who's in action there?
Yes, it's a big one, this one. Atletico Madrid taking on Sevilla. Early stages of this one, I can tell you, 7 minutes on the clock. It does remain Atletico Madrid 0, Sevilla 0. This is a big fixture, Atletico Madrid, this past week as well, confirming that Diego Costa will be heading back there. Due to their transfer ban, you won't see Diego Costa, the former Chelsea striker, in Atletico colours until January. But this is a big game nonetheless. Madrid trying to keep pace with Barcelona at the top of La Liga. But as I say, in those early stages, it remains Atletico Madrid 0, Sevilla 0. We're also building up, Tom, to the early kickoff in the English Premier League. It is a bit of a London, well, it's not a bit of a London derby, it is a London derby. It is West Ham United taking on Tottenham. I'll give you team news on that in the next 10 minutes or so.
Let us get some news from the two respective managers. Let's start with Pochettino, who has asked if a run of away games will benefit Spurs over the next couple of weeks.
No, I'm looking forward to playing Wembley. Wembley always. I love to play on Wembley. I think more game if we play in Wembley will be more close to make Wembley home. But it's true that the result from the beginning of the season they are not the best. But sure that we are going to change everything and try to transform all the negative to the positive.
What of West Ham? Slaven Bilic has got a few problems on his plate at the moment. Defending is obviously an issue. It's also the strikers up front. How does he pair Andy Carroll and Javier Hernandez? Well, he chose to focus on the defence and keeping clean sheets when he was asked earlier on the week.
It's not that we are using those basic things only when the time comes that we are back to the wall. Basic things have to be used in every game, in every day. That's why they are called basics. You have to do them. If you don't do them, you are dead. You don't have a chance.
That's why they're called basics, Chris McCarty.
That's why they are. But he makes a very valid point, a pretty obvious point there as well, does Slaven Bilic. But yeah, West Ham, they've not looked strong enough defensively. They're not scoring enough either. But certainly defensively is where I think the issue has lied for West Ham in these early weeks of the season. This is a big game for West Ham. We know Spurs' woes at Wembley. They've struggled with their new surroundings before they move into their new stadium next season. The same with West Ham. They're still getting used to the London Stadium. But I've got the team news in front of me, Tom. Let me run through the teams for you now. West Ham against Spurs. West Ham, the home team. Joe Hart starts in goals. It's a back three of Jose Fonte, Winston Reid and Angelo Ogbonna. It's a midfield four, so two wing-backs on this occasion. Pablo Zabaleta on the right. Aaron Cresswell. I'm a huge fan of Aaron Cresswell, the former Ipswich Town player. He's at left wing-back. It's Mark Noble and Chieko Kiyote. They're the midfield pairing. Then it's Mikel Antonio, Javier Hernandez and Marco Arnautovic. Arnautovic returning after that three-game ban, having been sent off against Southampton earlier on in the season. For Spurs, well, they've gone like for like. It's a 3-4-3 from them as well. A back three of Toby Alderweireld, Davinson Sanchez and Jan Vertonghen. Serge Aurier on the right, Ben Davies on the left, Eric Dier and Moussa Sissoko Then it comes the little two that make Spurs tick, Christian Eriksen and Dele Alli. And then up front, no surprise to see Harry Kane leading the line once again. Expect goals in this one, West Ham against Spurs. Spurs have got a decent recent record at West Ham, so I think I make them favourites just this afternoon, but expect goals and hopefully we get a good match.
What is it? What do you think the problem is for Slaven Bilic at the moment? He's been talking in the week, hasn't he, about this the striker partnership. Wants to have Andy Carroll and Javier Hernandez on the same pitch, but he's of the belief that the two don't suit each other's play.
And I tend to agree with that. I think that there's a big issue for West Ham if they do try and pair those two. I just don't think out of possession, Javier Hernandez and Andy Carroll give you enough. And that would be my one worry. I think today he's obviously given Javier Hernandez the nod. Hernandez is the type of striker, though, that needs chances. You don't really see Javier Hernandez in the game unless the team is creating chances. If you create chances, then there's probably no finer, maybe Aguero in the Premier League. But in terms of a sharpshooter, someone that sniffs out the chance and scores goals, Javier Hernandez is top drawer. You've got to create those chances for him. Him and Andy Carroll, they're not like for like. Andy Carroll's very much the battering ram, the number nine. But out of possession is the area where I feel West Ham, if they were to clear the two of them, that's where they're found lacking. So I can understand why Andy Carroll's been left on the bench today and Hernandez has been given the nod.
I mean, what's happened in the last couple of games is that they've seen Hernandez playing out of place, playing out a little further wide, which seems to be sort of negate, you know, his possibilities. He's not getting much touch on the ball. I mean, isn't there an argument just to try them both up front? I mean, I know he's got issues with regards to it's been a poor start to the season, but you know, we've seen it in the past, haven't we? The big man and the little man combining well, and if Andy McCarroll's good in the air, then why don't we go back to the long ball game up in the air and
yeah, the direct, running off? A little direct. Yeah, there's an argument to say that as well. Mikel Antonio wide on the right. Arnautovic, though, always worries me left of a four, midfield four. I just think, again, out of possession, and it's such an important part of football now, how you set up, how you are disciplined and organised out of possession. And I just think, I won't say luxury players are Hernandez, Carroll, Arnautovic, but it's just what they give you when you're not in possession that would worry me, and that's why he's looking for that solidity. He's looking for that kind of safety blanket, if you will, of a back three. He's playing the two wing backs as well. So today I expect West Ham, as they were against Huddersfield, that was the last time I sat down and watched West Ham from start to finish, Tom, there was a little bit more solidity about them playing that back three. He clearly feels that's the way to go, and he's clearly feeling that in Antonio and Arnautovic either side of Hernandez, he's got a goal scoring threat, and they're going to need that today if they are to get 3 points against Spurs.
You're listening to The Grill, broadcasting live from Barasta, where the game is always on. If you're looking for somewhere to watch the football, then come on down. We've got two games on already. Early kickoff in Scotland and Spain, and we're just waiting for kickoff in the next 15 minutes or so down at the London Stadium. West Ham taking on Spurs. That one's your early kickoff in the Premier League. You're listening to The Grill. As I said, if you'd like to have your say, do exactly that. You can text us now, 4001.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
Games on at the moment, a couple of games on in fact. Early in Spain, early in Scotland, Chris McCarty.
Yeah, let's start in Scotland if we can. 19 minutes on the clock, Tom. This is a really good game, this. Rangers starting to come into this one. Celtic dominating the opening 5-10 minutes of this one, carving out a couple of half chances without really getting a clear sight of goal. Rangers, though, are starting now to find their way into this match. The fans are most certainly up for this one. There's no love loss between these two teams, between both sets of fans, as we well know. And I always make the argument that in terms of derbies, same city derbies, I'm not talking Barca Real, but in terms of same city derbies, this is the biggest match in world football. For all the political, social, cultural kind of references that go with it as well, it really is a huge fixture. Glasgow will be buzzing right now, but at 90 minutes on the clock, it is Rangers 0, Celtic 0.
Thanks very much indeed for that one. No goals in Spain.
No, it's still 0-0. Yeah, Atletico Madrid, 17 minutes on the clock in that one. They don't often produce a lot of goals, do Atletico Madrid in Sevilla matches, and I can tell you that 18 minutes on the clock in that one, Atletico dominating much of the possession, but it remains 0-0 in that one.
Let's go over to the NRL because we've got a prelim final on.
Yeah, it's the second of this weekend's preliminary finals, which is basically a semi-final, and the grand final, of course, will be next weekend, next Sunday, down at ANZ Stadium in Sydney, 1st of October. Yesterday it was the Melbourne Storm that advanced to the final with a big win over the Brisbane Broncos, 30 points to nil, but there's 9 minutes remaining in the second preliminary final. It's in Sydney, it's the Roosters taking on the North Queensland Cowboys, and it's the Cowboys that lead 22 points to 16 with 8.5 minutes remaining. We'll keep you bang up to date with any tries in the last 8 minutes, but at the moment it's the Cowboys heading to the grand final. to take on the Melbourne Storm.
What happened yesterday? Melbourne Storm obviously won.
Yeah, big win for the Melbourne Storm, of course. They beat the Broncos 30 points to nil. They scored 4 tries to nil, 2 to Billy Slater, which could be his final season, of course, all converted by Cameron Smith. Let's just have a listen to the highlights in the first preliminary final for the NFL yesterday. It was a Storm taking on the Broncos.
A grand final berth, the prize. The stakes were high. Cooper Cronk's final game for the Storm at Amy Park, adding to the occasion, while the Broncos were given a boost of their own.
Yeah, there's Darius, who's back from a hamstring problem.
But there were worrying signs early on for the Broncos skipper.
He's hobbling.
Yeah, he looks proppy, doesn't he?
The Storm creating a host of chances, but just couldn't convert. Craig Bellamy, none too pleased. They needed the penalty to open their account.
So it's Melbourne with first points, courtesy of a penalty goal.
The Broncos were finding space, but like the Storm, just couldn't finish off.
Another one's gone down.
He had the pass.
They can't finish either of these teams.
It wasn't until the shadows of half-time that the first four-pointer was scored.
Pass! And O'Carr! He's clear! He's gone! Forget about it! And O'Carr away! He scores his 21st of the season! And that was wonderful skill. The pass to Addo Carr was magnificent.
The Storm going to the Sheds ahead 8-0, but the halftime break didn't stem the flow of errors.
The man who takes the catch there. Oh, Nelson Asafa Solomona loses it from the restart.
More problems for Nelson Asafa Solomona after a head clash. More highlights in the Storm coaching box than out on the field.
Oh, here we go. Corey Ozy puts the snap kick up. It's gone backwards.
Well, that's the worst kick I've ever seen in the NRL history.
Boyd eventually succumbing to his dodgy hamstring. While he was being treated, his opposite number stepped up.
What a ball. Slater. Billy for the corner. Slater scores. And the crowd love it.
There's some power running.
Another Storm champion making Brisbane's job even tougher.
Here's Smith with a big kick. It was never going to miss. It was only ever going over.
The margin out to 14. The Broncos buckle.
It's inside pass. Look out. He's Nelson. Nelson puts it down. He nearly went through the Amy Park turf.
Smith, the first player to reach 1,000 goals. Then his old mate copped some rough treatment.
This is the worst one because it's in the back.
Cronk rebounded to set up a second for Slater.
Slater's there! Billy explodes away! And they can celebrate!
Kahu comes in late and dives on him and injures that knee. Once again, another cheap shot.
He's giving Jordan Kahu a mouthful.
A late penalty goal, making it 30-0. Melbourne now with 9 wins in a row, but most importantly, they're the first team through to the grand final.
Those are the highlights then. Yesterday, we know who is through to the final on one side, and it looks like they're going to be joined by...
the North Queensland Cowboys. Yeah, 4 minutes remaining in the second preliminary final. It's the North Queensland Cowboys leading the Sydney Roosters 22 points to 16. We'll keep you bang up today in the last 5 minutes if there's any further action in that match. So it's going to be Melbourne Storm taking on the winner of the Queensland Cowboys versus the Sydney Roosters. That's next Sunday, the grand final in ANZ Stadium in Sydney, Tom.
Right, we are. Let us go to a quick bit more build-up to our early kick-off in the Premier League. London Stadium looking a picture at the moment. West Ham entertaining Spurs. Rivals, these two. This is a London derby, lot at stake. Let's hear from Eric Dyer, obviously one man that makes Spurs tick and England to an extent these days. What's he been saying midweek?
He's just been talking about the fact that they need to stick together. He's admitted, Tom, that they've not been at their best, and that much is evident. And what is it, 2 wins, 2 draws and a defeat from their opening 5 games. But as he says in this clip, they've got to stick together.
This season hasn't been terrible, but there's results that we're disappointed with. But I think, as I said, we know there's so much more to come from us, so there's so much potential. We can always improve, and we're working very hard towards that. So I think that's the good thing, isn't it? If you know it hasn't been terrible, and you can do a lot better, then it doesn't make it that bad.
Bubbles on the pitch down there at West Ham at the moment, waiting for the players to make their way out. Slaven Bilic, rock and a hard place, isn't he? I know, he's got a good squad to work with. He's not getting them to gel. They're not playing as a team at the moment. There's a lot of talent there. seems like there's a bit of misunderstanding between him and the two Daves up in the director's box as well. But the other thing that, and you know, this is coming from a West Ham fan, it's a fairly unforgiving task being West Ham manager, isn't it? Because the fans demand so much. Yeah. They demand a way of playing the game. They want to see the West Ham brand of football played.
That's exactly it, Tom, and I think expectations, you've hit the nail on the head right there. West Ham fans expect their football club to be competing at the top end of the table. Whether that's realistic or not is up for debate, but when you're spending the money that they have spent, I mean, Marko Arnautović wasn't cheap, Javier Hernandez, not cheap, Andre Ayew, who I'm pretty sure is still one of West Ham's top signings in terms of what they've lavished on his transfer fee, he's not even getting in the team, so they've spent an awful lot of money there. The whole Dimitri Payet debacle certainly hasn't helped Slaven Bilic. They would have loved to have had Payet still in that team. He was excellent when he came over to English football. I've said this from the start of the season. Slaven Bilic, as much as he's a good guy, I thought he did a wonderful job in his opening season, was very good manager for Croatia national team. I am just not convinced that he is the man for West Ham long term, and I would be very surprised if he's still at this football club come the end of the season. I just think there is a malaise setting in there. There is this backbiting. You see the two Davids never shy to come out into the press and say something that might be at odds with what Slaven Bilic's message is. So I think we are headed for a bit of a collision course, because it is a results-driven business. West Ham have won 1 in 5 at the start of the season. As I say, I'm leaning towards Spurs getting a result today, and you know, the pressure will slowly mount, and I am hearing as well, rumours have been doing the rounds for a number of weeks now, that West Ham are already out in the marketplace talking to various individuals to assess who would be willing to take on that job. So once they get someone in place, once the ducks are all lined up and results continue, if they were to continue going against Slaven Bilic, then you will see a drastic decision taken that probably will see Bilic lose his job.
Your thoughts, please. Text them through to us on 4001. We've got the team news for you. The thing is, what tactics are Slaven Bilic going to imply to this game? Let's get some thoughts from two former pros about the West Ham tactics going into this game. Would it be all-out attack? Let's find out more.
It's a London rivalry, and it's always got a bit of a twist to it, isn't it? It's West Ham against Tottenham. It's the live game for you this Saturday lunchtime on Sky Sports Premier League. And as always on a Friday, Danny is here to cast his eye on something that we should keep an eye on in this game. So what have you got for us this week?
I just wanted to have a look at West Ham this week. I think, you know, Tottenham, we've done a bit of them over, you know, over the last few months. I think it'd be good to look at West Ham. And really, the difference with Hernandez playing as the sole front man, and then when Andy Carroll comes back, obviously, you know, we'll talk about Andy Carroll in a minute, but we've just taken him out of the equation. So what was happening was you had Hernandez as your front man, Antonio, as we've just seen, looking to support him, and these players higher up the pitch. So then if we look at the opposition, Eriksen up there, Dele Alli, for example, this weekend, obviously you've got Dio, who'll probably sit a little bit, Sissoko can get forward, Trippier, Son, then your three centre-backs. So, as we've spoken about before, with Hernandez as a sole front man, it's very, very difficult for them to play long, because there's no real space. Well, sorry, there's not that much pace in behind for Hernandez to get onto. He's not a tall target man either. So, your options are, okay, try and play that ball, very risky. Try and play that ball, very risky. Try and play that ball, very risky. These players, like I said, they're quite happy to push up. Look how congested this is now. So congested in there. So in an ideal world, what they would do is go, okay, tell you what we're going to do. We're going to go longer. Because we're going to beat the press, so we're going to go over it. Because that's what teams have been doing. That's what teams are doing to West Ham on the season. But because there is not really that threat in behind, or there's not really that threat of the physical presence, West Ham have tried to play out from the back, and they've been caught out a number of times of it. And as a centre-forward, Hernandez, the more frustrated he gets, the more he wants to get involved. The DP drops there. So all of a sudden, you've got every single West Ham player in their own half. So if you've got a player like Andy Carroll, he's going to play higher up the pitch. The likes of Antonio, Hernandez, Kriate. Just move these up a little bit. So if we say Tottenham are going to press high, the wing-backs are going to push really high as well. Trippier is going to come up. Your two defensive midfielders, Sissoko a little bit higher, and Dier. And then you've got your back three, right? So the back three come up. Let's bring Carroll to about here. And then Alderweireld, okay? Now, the thing is, Tottenham are pressing, so realistically, that ball Still a very, very tough pass to make. That one's still a tough pass to make. That one's still a tough pass to make. This area, which we've spoken about before, still very congested. All of a sudden now, though, Ogbonna, Reed, Font, Collins, whoever's in there, they now have the option. Go along to Andy Carroll.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
Yeah, but thanks for joining us this Saturday afternoon. Talking of games, conclusion in the NRL prelims.
Yeah, we know who the finalists are now for next weekend's grand final. It'll be in Sydney, but both the finalists will not be from Sydney. It's the North Queensland Cowboys have just defeated the Sydney Roosters 29 points to 16. They have advanced to the grand final next weekend. They'll be taking on the Melbourne Storm, who yesterday defeated the Brisbane Broncos. So the final will be in ANZ Stadium in Sydney, but the teams will be from Victoria and Queensland. Figure that out, Tom.
Got that. Thank you very much indeed. What's happening in the football? Let's get the latest from Chris McCarty.
Not much. I've got my laptop open. I'm looking to my left and looking to my right. Let me start in Scotland if we can. 34 minutes on the clock at Ibrox. It remains at Rangers 0, Celtic 0. Rangers, though, carved open a real good opportunity down the right-hand side a few moments ago. The little striker, the Colombian Morales up front, he failed to convert, though. So it remains Rangers 0, Celtic 0. If I turn to my left, it is Spurs against West Ham. The opening stages of this one. 5 minutes gone down at the London Stadium. Frenetic pace, as you'd expect, in an all-London clash, and certainly with a crowd behind West Ham, the Spurs fans in full voice as well. But 5 minutes on the clock, as I say, nothing separates these two. It's West Ham 0, Spurs 0. And if we head to Spain as well, Tom, it remains Atletico Madrid 0, Sevilla 0 in the early kickoff over there.
Let us turn our attention to matters closer to home, and obviously we are gearing up for the Grand Prix here in Abu Dhabi. End of November?
It is the end of the November, yes. What is it, 26th, if memory serves me correct, 26th of November. That is when the F1 Roadshow rolls into town for a ninth year, Tom. It's always a fantastic spectacle up at the Abu Dhabi Yas Marina Circuit, and I'm looking forward to it. And we're just talking off air that it's all bubbling up nicely. Last week might have changed things a little with Lewis Hamilton winning over at the Singapore Grand Prix, the two Ferraris crashing out, but all still to play for. It's going to be a packed house down in Abu Dhabi, and as always, cannot wait to dust out the old wooden bow tie and look the part for what is a fantastic weekend.
The wooden bow tie, yeah. You were talking about the build-up to it as well. Last weekend's race over in Singapore had all the drama, of course, and threw a bit of a spanner in the works when it comes to competition.
Boom, boom again with that one. Yeah, it did. Lewis Hamilton, he admitted before the race he needed a miracle. He qualified down in fifth. We see so often Lewis Hamilton have poor starts. He actually, funnily enough, had an unbelievable start. Got himself into a wonderful position. But really, the real story of it was what was going on ahead of him. Sebastian Vettel starting in pole. Max Verstappen had a wonderful start off the start line as well. Vettel being aggressive, trying to tie off the racing line. But what he didn't count for was Kimi Raikkonen coming out on the outside. And what it all meant was it was a three-way sandwich. They all crashed out, the two Ferraris out, as was Max Verstappen. And Lewis Hamilton, he must have been cackling his whole way round that opening lap, because he took charge, never relinquished it. A fantastic drive from Lewis, and all of a sudden, from 3 points to 28 points ahead in the Drivers' Championship.
Is it done and dusted, though?
No, it isn't. Six races left. Of course it isn't. It's sport. We know that you can never take anything lightly in sport, so Lewis Hamilton will be confident, no doubt about that, as he tries to see off what would be a fourth World Drivers' Championship title for the Brit, but Ferrari have been impressive. Sebastian Vettel is a true champion. Six races to go, all to play for.
Mark Archer, looking forward to all things Formula One down in the nation's capital.
Yeah, I am indeed. I think it's fair to say that over the last few seasons, Abu Dhabi's been great, being the final race of the season. But we've always seen the interest within one team. It's always been, for the last 4 to 5 years, it's been the dominance of Mercedes. Before that was Red Bull. But this season, with the battle between two teams, has brought in more development elements. We see more drivers now competing for the podium. We know that on their day, both those teams are very, very competitive against each other, depending on their setups, depending on the tracks. And as we've seen last weekend, the drama at the first bend. So it's been a much more interesting season. We know we've talked about a lot over the recent years. Formula One, sometimes when it's dominated by one team, hasn't been as appealing, hasn't been interesting, when you kind of know the result of the race depending on how qualifying goes. But I think this year, heading into Abu Dhabi, it's all to play for. All calculations are still there. We know the winner's going to come from one of two teams, but the title and the constructors' title are still up for grabs with, you know, what, six races left, and hopefully it'll come down to Abu Dhabi with, again, multiple permutations. And so make sure you get your tickets, book in.
Well, the man with the plan is with us. Next joined us from Yas Marina Circuit. Really appreciate you coming up to have a chat with us here on The Grill. I mean, in terms of planning ahead for the Grand Prix, is it a year-long process?
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. Absolutely, yes. I mean, we do a very comprehensive wrap-up after every Grand Prix, which starts the planning cycle for the following championship. So it's a 12-month cycle. It's really important for us to improve and develop the product every year, so we don't just roll out the same, you know, the same product you saw the previous year. So we learn what worked really well, we learn what we can improve, we then set about developing the product, and then we go to market beginning of the year. So it's very much, you know, we put ourselves under considerable pressure to always improve the customer experience. I mean, certain things like what happens on track we can't control, but we can control everything else. We can control the experience for the customer, the weekend entertainment, and so on.
I suppose the other thing to bear in mind as well, Nick, is the fact that it is a year-long process, not just for one race. There is activities going on at the circuit, Yas Marina Circuit, throughout the year.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, since the first Grand Prix, 2009, you know, our business plan was always to present a 365-days-a-year venue. It's a multi-purpose venue. We have racing experiences. So in Yas Central, we've got some 75, 80 products from AMGs, Aston Martin GT4s, and so on. We've got a card zone. We've got a drag strip. And then, of course, our health and fitness activities are huge. We have over 200,000 visits a year to the circuit just for health and fitness purposes. So Train Yas on Tuesday nights, free for anyone to come down, cycle, walk, and run on the track. It got so busy, we now have Start Yas on Sunday nights and Go Yas for females only on a Wednesday night. So huge, huge engagement with the local community, whether it's in motorsports or not.
In terms of that, October the 6th, I think, is the first date that we're going to focus on. You've got a Nitro event down there?
Yeah, I mean, there's a great example, actually. Now, for those of you who are familiar with the circuit, the North Grandstand, which is the hairpin, presents as a really nice amphitheater. And it was designed to be an amphitheater. So on October the 6th, we've got Nitro Circus. So it's a really nice bowl-shaped venue where we've got a large field of play, and it's perfectly suited to an event like Nitro Circus, where, of course, we've got 30, you know, BMX, freestyle, yeah, motocross, and so on. So it's a really, really good event to host at that sort of venue, if you like. So, yeah, it's Yas Amphitheatre, October 6th, Yas Marina Circuit.
Tickets available for it?
Yes, sure are. Tixbox or yasmarinacircuit.com.
Obviously, activities going on throughout the year as well.
Exactly that. And one, too, that I want to point out as well, Yas Marina Circuit, so often it's synonymous now. Of course it is with the Abu Dhabi Formula One Grand Prix, Nick, but there is so much more going on, and it really has now become a home for an awful lot more motor racing series and events. Talk us through another couple that you've got running and the ones that really bring out the fans and bring out the participants in motorsport.
Yeah, I mean, I think the key for us is to build from the bottom up the local motorsport, so grassroots motorsport. So we have our own cup, TRD 86 Cup, which is our own grassroots Yas Marina Circuit owned championship, and that competes six Yas Racing Series events, which will start at the end of October and run all the way through to March next year. But really, that local participation, making it affordable for local motorsport enthusiasts who want to go racing, some 180, under 200,000 dirhams to go racing for a season, which is incredibly good value for an enthusiastic motorsport fan who wants to step up and actually compete. So yes, we're very much invested in Yas Racing Series. We'll have five rounds. There's six rounds in total. Five will be at Yas Marina Circuit and one will be in Dubai Autodrome.
Nick, I want to talk about the Formula One weekend. I often get asked by friends or family around the world, what is the best weekend to come to the UAE for sport? And I often say, look, the one weekend I would choose or recommend is the Formula One weekend. It's not just about the race on the Sunday or the qualifying on the Saturday. There's so much more going on around the circuit and in Abu Dhabi for sort of 4 or 5 days, for the whole week. What can we look forward to this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's huge. I mean, we have 60,000 capacity we sell out every year. We could increase the capacity, but we want to maintain the momentum and ensure that we get, that we really deliver a full product to all of our ticket purchasers. But we as well as being a twilight race, which separates Abu Dhabi from all the other Grand Prix, Singapore, Bahrain, these are night races. We start in the day and finish in the evening, in the dark. But we offer a four-day product, if you like. So we have what we call Super Thursday. And Super Thursday gives us pit lane walk. Last year we introduced artists on the Thursday night, but international level artists. No other Grand Prix does that. And also new for this year, we have agreed with Formula One to have 4 hours of track access. So we'll be offering a hot laps for, you know, to buy, but for the first time ever, available will be hot laps on the Thursday. So you can get down there with your race ticket, jump into a car and take a hot lap across the track as part of the F1 weekend. And then we've got Family Friday. So again, trying to create a four-day package. So, you know, typically on track, it's practice. It's not, it's, you know, it's the weaker of the three Grand Prix, you know, activities on the track, if you like. But on the Friday, what we're doing this year is kids go free. So for all three-day ticket purchasers, they can register their kids up to four and bring them down to the track on the Friday to check out, see what's going on. They won't be allocated a seat, but they'll be in the same grandstand so they can roam around and really explore and see what it's about. Because sometimes the kids, particularly under 12, you know, they're not, you know, they're not going to sit there for an hour and a half and watch cars go around. You know, they're not going to sit in the same seat. So very much we want to play into that, give them sort of free run, if you like, of the activities on the Friday, because also included is their access into Ferrari World and the water park as well. So, you know, friends, you know, Family Friday with that Kids Go Free, which is new. This is a new initiative this year. And then, of course, you've got the Friday night concerts. And then Saturday and Sunday we get into the racing itself. Obviously, we've got free practice and then qualies on the Saturday night. Huge excitement around that, of course. See who, you know, sitting on pole for race day, and then race day on the Sunday. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, big international artists, as well as all the activity in the Oasis areas, and then all the activity on Yas Island, which includes the parks.
Talking about the artists, I know we've announced two. I think I'm correct in saying two have been announced. I know Chris Bacardi is particularly looking forward to Pink, and Tom Urquhart is looking forward to Calvin Harris. When do we hear the next announcements for the artists today? Is that sort of coming along pretty shortly?
Yeah, this Tuesday. So this Tuesday, September 26th, we're going to announce the Saturday artist.
Why wait till Tuesday, Nick? Just don't know. It's fine.
Any clues?
Okay, so...
any clues? Nick, I've got to ask about... I've scribbled down here, Hot Lap Thursday. Talk to us more about this, because that is a wonderful new initiative and a great addition to what you're doing over the course of the weekend. There'll be a lot of people listening now thinking, wait a minute, Hot Lap, I can jump in. Will it be... What kind of cars will you be rolling out there, and how can one get involved in that?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I guess, in the background of F1, as well as it being a tremendously exciting championship this year, and obviously still in the balance, and hopefully we'll see a championship decider back in Abu Dhabi. By the way, Sebastian Vettel, when he won the championship in 2010, was 31 points adrift, six races out. He's 28
Good
points.
Stat.
So this is very much alive, this championship. But the thing is that there's new management in F1, and they very much want to focus in on that customer experience, bring new audiences into Formula One, you know, and as well as the typical diehard motorsport fan, you know, there are these casual fans, and they typically are a younger audience, so they're very much opening to new ideas, and we've always, as the Aspirin Circuit, have always pushed. Always tried to push with F1 what we could offer our customers, because, you know, relatively speaking, say compared to Silverstone or some other Grand Prix in Europe, our fan base is a hybrid fan base. You've got your motorsport fans, but you've got a lot of people who are casual fans and actually may never have been to a Grand Prix before. So it's really important that we offer a different and new type of product and sort of focus on the experience. So we've been talking to Formula One about that ever since the beginning, really. But this year, with new management, Formula One are very much embracing that spirit, which obviously, and the consequence of that is 4 hours of track access. So you're down there with your ticket. You can turn up, and we will then we'll process you through our hot lap. So we'll be using our own vehicles out of our racing school.
And Nicky, you're missing Bernie?
Look, Bernie was a phenomenon. You know, I mean, what he did for the sport was huge. But the king is dead, long live the king, I guess. The sport, just like anything, a business, or it needs to progress, it needs to develop, and you know, new ideas and new momentum always needs to carry it forward. The sport is bigger than any one individual.
I've got to ask as well, Nick, you talk there about F1, okay, it's the crown jewel, but you're doing an awful lot for grassroots motor racing. I want to throw the name Amna Al-Kabesi at you, because she's a 17-year-old Emirati. We've had her on the show before, doing wonderful things, putting UE racing on the map, now racing in Formula 4. How important is that to the Yas Marina legacy, that you're unearthing these gems, giving them the platform to go and excel at their chosen sport? Because, of course, I guess the long-term plan for the UE is, who knows, one day to have an Emirati driver at the very top of motorsport.
It's absolutely huge. I mean, absolutely huge. I mean, Amne is a great example. She's a, you know, a fantastic talent, brilliantly developed by her father, you know, who obviously is a known motorsport, you know, professional. But she brilliantly developed and a real talent. But I think, you know, any sport, not just motorsports, but if you have that local hero, it makes a huge difference to the following. And then, of course, once you see the following, then you'll see the participation increase and you'll see the interest and the investment in the sport, and the whole sport will take off. So it's absolutely crucial that you have that local interest. And I would also say, I think for me, it's particularly interesting that it's a female driver.
Indeed it is. And talk to me about the TRD 86 Cup, because you said it earlier, that gives anyone a chance to get in and to get a flavour of motorsport and motor racing. Is it a case of all shapes and sizes, all ages that take part in that, or are you starting to see a younger generation emerge and take to that particular series?
Well, I think the barriers to motorsports have been the cost. And I think the most significant thing that we could do was present a relatively cheap entry to competition. So for less than 200,000 dirhams, it's a TRD, it's a Toyota 86, a race-spec Toyota 86. It's a really cost-effective way into the sport. And then obviously working with ATC and working with the other interested motorsport, you know, entities in the UAE, that's how we'll start developing the talent, start bringing in the drivers, allowing them access to, you know, to see and to push their own, you know, their talent.
We've spoken a lot about motorsport, and with good reason as well. We've got a Blue Ribbon event coming to the As Marina circuit, but you're as you said, you know, there is so much going on there throughout the year, and a lot of it not motorsport related as well. I mean, is that something that's taken you pleasantly by surprise, just how triathletes, cyclists, runners have taken to using the facilities?
No, honestly, it was by design. I mean, you know, at the very beginning when, you know, once we'd had the first Grand Prix, we started to develop our engagement with international, regional, as well as local audiences. And we said that we wanted the As Marina circuit to be what Central Park is to New Yorkers, what Hyde Park is to Londoners, a real playground for everyone in the local community, as well as obviously international visitors. But I mean, you know, we've had, for 6 years now, we've had a triathlon, Tri-As. So we've been invested in triathlons, we've been developing that over the years. Obviously, that comes off, it spins off the train, yeah, so people come down and they can practice and, you know, and train and then step up and do a triathlon, you know. So that sort of performance-related activity is really important to us. I mean, you know, it's a little bit of marketing, but we say that we're the meeting place of champions, and that applies not just to motorsports, but everything that happens there, even the sort of, we have a conference center, you know, and all of the events and all of the corporate activity. You know, we want to attract, you know, we want to attract people to the As Marina circuit who, you know, for whom that champions, that spirit of a champion is really relevant, you know. So it doesn't have to be motorsports, of course. It could be other sports as well. But for us, you know, even train, yes, doesn't matter if you've never cycled 5.5 kilometers before. You come down to the track and you set yourself the goal of cycling 5.5. So it's about achieving something. And I think that's really important, you know.
It is indeed. The other thing is important, I suppose, at the moment, is getting your hands on tickets. I mean, we've talked a lot about the Grand Prix. We've talked a lot about other activities. Are you, and the marketing for ticket sales starts very, very early when it comes to Grand Prix, with good reason. How are sales going this year?
Yeah, really strong, actually. You know, we sold out. We've sold out every event. We fully expect to sell out this year. In fact, this year we're ahead at this point in the season. We're ahead of where we were last year. So there is significant interest around the racing, but also there's the expectation about how we deliver the Grand Prix and what sort of experience across race weekend during the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. But we're what, some 9 weeks out now. So really we're in the home stretches. We start, as you say, we start in March. So we're more than three quarters past our ticket sales. So we're getting to the final stages now. Tuesday, when we announce the remaining artists, will be the last push, really, and that's particularly aimed at the local market, for those, you know, who've been before, been many times, and then just to remind them, listen, don't miss out, you know, make sure to step up and buy your ticket. I mean, it's interesting, we have 65% international visitors this year, particularly the first phase two, really, really strong phase one in particular. So we're seeing more and more international visitors come in. You know, we go around to quite a few Grand Prix, and each one of them has their own sort of, has their own thing, has their own sort of spirit or personality, if you like. But we really do work hard on what that customer product is, and it is a very, very well-differentiated and good value for money. You know, it's that 4 days. And, of course, Abu Dhabi, the UAE itself, it's tremendous value, you know, if you compare it to other markets. You know, so what you can get into, you know, the sorts of prices you're paying for four-star, three-star, four-star, five-star hotels. and then all of the value that gets included into your Grand Prix ticket is huge compared to other Grand Prix.
Comparing to other Grand Prix, if we can for a moment, how does that sort of visitor take up compare to other international Grand Prix? Do other Grand Prix around the world attract foreign tourists coming in for them?
Honestly, we're unusual in that respect. Most of them appeal to a local audience. If you say something like Monza, you know, it's a very, very strong Italian, obviously Italian Ferrari following. You know, they won't see many people traveling in for that event. Silverstone's a very British affair. The United States, a lot of Mexicans came up, but then, you know, then now they've got their own race. So really, actually, having such a high international representation is unusual in the Grand Prix. And even Singapore last weekend, not many people will fly in for the Singapore event, you know.
And what are you finding, Nick? Is it GCC that they're coming in for? Are they coming in from Jordan? Are they coming in from Oman?
Yes,
or is it wider afield?
It's across the region. But honestly, our number one market is the UAE, as you'd imagine. Our number two market is the UK. We see a lot of UK audiences coming in. They know the sport. They know Abu Dhabi. They like the value. They like the product. So very strong. And then after that, we'd see France, Germany. So it comes in from Europe and then the region spread across, obviously, Saudi and other countries in the region.
I guess the media coverage, if you look at the media coverage alone, take away the sports tourism element where people are travelling to watch the sport as a spectator, the eyes of the sporting world are really on Abu Dhabi for that weekend. It is the pinnacle race, it's the final race of the season, and you must have hundreds of accredited media just come in and want to do the coverage, do the interviews and showcase Abu Dhabi as a great sporting venue.
Yeah, we have one of the biggest media centres actually of all the Grand Prix. We have over 400 media accredited for the media centre. So, and obviously, you know, a lot of those will be international media as well as local media. But it's a huge media centre. It's one of the most, it's obviously one of the most, the busiest media centres. Melbourne is very busy, but of course that's the start of the season. Plus, if you're an international journalist, you've got to go there and pick up your badge. Otherwise, you won't get your badge for the season. So other than Melbourne, we're the strongest media centre. So it's all of that interest, all of that media interest. I mean, for us, we've always tried to be the modern definition of F1, try new things. You know, we work closely with Formula One management so that we can look at what's coming, what's next, what the future of the sport is, particularly as far as the customer, you know, is concerned. And we want to bring those to the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. So, we're constantly trying to, you know, underline that, you know, modern definition of a Grand Prix. And I think that works really well for our international fans as well, obviously, for our local fans.
You mentioned there, Nick, that about the huge interest from a media point of view, the fans as well. Part of the reason for that is that it is the final race of the calendar. There's more often than not an awful lot on the line. How vital is it for Yas moving forward in the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix that it is that final race of the season? Does it really matter now, 9 years in?
I think the key thing for us is the slot in the calendar, if you like. So for us, really, the end of November. November, you know, certainly not going into December and not before November. So really, it's the November window which is most important to us. And that's because we do have that huge international visitation. So if you go too far into December, and of course, you know, there's talk about adding more Grand Prix to the championship. If it goes too late into December, we're going to lose all of that international visitation as we start moving into Christmas, particularly for a UK or European audience. So it wouldn't help us to be the last race of the season. So we've got to keep an eye on what it is we're trying to deliver commercially and where we would sit. And then, of course, we don't want to go before November because it might get too hot, you know. And that, so really perfect for us. A perfect window is where we sit at the moment. Let's see what the championship does around us, whether they're at it or not. But I think that window is more important to us than actually having the last, necessarily being the last race.
And does the state of the championship, does that impact on visitors to the final race of the season or not?
No, it doesn't. What it does is there is a particular buzz. I don't know if you guys, you know, we had a championship decider in 2010, 2014, and last year. So we've had three, which is great. I think it's, and there's this particular type of atmosphere. There's an electricity because everyone comes in meaning business, you know, and all the teams are coming in looking to do business. But for us, really, you'll see that a lot of our ticket purchasers are buying them as soon as we launch. So we launch in March. Our phase one, which is an early bird discount phase, goes up to May 31st. We've sold a lot of our tickets to the international market by then. Then we have phase two, which is a 20% discount up to July 31st. And again, all of those internationals, as well as the local, because they know they're going to go, the local and regional audiences, they're stepping up and they're buying the ticket. So well in advance of them knowing actually how that championship's going to play out. So it's not critical for us. It's a nice to have, if you like.
And do you think this year this championship is done and dusted, or are there still a few tricks and turns but to be performed before the end of the season?
Oh, no, it's wide open. It's not done and dusted.
He's the man
all.
With the stats, Tom. You said it, Nick. 31 points a few years back.
Yes.
The best in Vettel
2010,
was behind.
Vettel was 31 points behind when he came in to win the
so
championship. Absolutely.
Tells
and look
story.
What happened last weekend. I mean, Vettel was flying in qualification. He pulled that qualifying lap out of nowhere. Amazing. And then only 24 hours later,
he doesn't even finish
lap one. Both Ferraris out. I mean, I think that's what's happening this year. So it's, yeah, absolutely. It's all to play for. Six Grand Prix, it's wide open.
I've got to ask very quickly as well. I'm conscious of time. Liberty Media, have they been enjoyed working with them and in the planning stage of ensuring that your race is up to par for the end of the season?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for those who don't know, I mean, Liberty Media, the new F1 management, they're an American media organization, so they understand what it is to put on a show.
Yeah.
And they're looking to, if you like, compare a Grand Prix to, say, a Super Bowl. You know, and they won 21 Super Bowls across the year. Now, it's interesting because what we've been doing in Abu Dhabi is the model that they want to try and roll out across all the other Grand Prix. And, we've been very organized. We've had a very clear idea what we wanted to engage our audiences with. That it was, yes, absolutely, it was about F1, but there was more to F1 in Abu Dhabi. And it was as much about the show off the track as it was what was happening on the track is really key for us. And I think that's exactly what they want to do for the other Grand Prix, so that the weaker Grand Prix, if you like, they want to step them up to make sure that there is, the movement of direction is, 21 Super Bowls.
A lot of information over the last half hour. Talking of information, if people want to keep updated with events down at Yas Marina Circuit.
So, yeah, obviously the website, yasmarinacircuit.com or .ae. You can check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at YMCOfficial.
Nick McElwee, we thank you for your time. Thanks so much indeed. Very much looking forward to the end of November. And, of course, all the other activities throughout the season, throughout the year. But thanks very much for your time today.
Thanks very much for having us.
Good to have Nick McElwee with us here live from Barasti. He's the Sales and Marketing Director at Yas Marina Circuit. Time's 4 o'clock. Time for the news.
This is The Grill. Tweet the team at Dubai iSport.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.